there are opportunities in life for gaining knowledge and experience.
So let's have a conversation.
Okay. What would you like to have a conversation about?
Hi, folks, and welcome to the podcast. This would be our first show of 2019 after handing you a rerun last time. So yeah. This would be episode 61. Today we're going to look at a very light and breezy film called First Reformed. But before we do that, I think we should have a little chat, Rune. Maybe explain our little break there. It was our first real break for us since we started, wasn't it?
I think we had another break last summer, but nothing really like this, where we just all of a sudden had to make a break.
There are reasons.
For me, a lot of stuff has happened because between the last show we did and this one, I've become a house owner, or like an apartment owner.
Congratulations. That's fantastic news.
Thank you. But this process of buying an apartment during Christmas and New Year's when nobody is working, that is like, there's some extra stress there.
Well, at least you're not in the USA where they have just like shut down the government.
We have that.
Bright side.
At least
side.
That. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Thank you for reminding me. Yeah, so everything has gone through. We have the keys now, but that limbo state before you get the keys and when you actually get to pay like quite a large sum of money and like all of that stuff like had to work out some way, and we were working to make it work.
It's been a busy time for you, no doubt.
Yeah, and then I got a little bit sick as well. That's why I'm wearing a scarf now. And, you know, like all fun and games and all good things except for the sickness, of course. but, you know, now we're coming out of it. Now we need to prepare the whole apartment and then we need to move.
It is a heavy, stress, pressurized time, even though it's fantastic news. So
yeah, it's something that you should be so happy and energetic
and
about.
You are.
But it goes onto the same account of all other kinds of energy that you're using throughout your day.
Exactly. So,
but I can return and say I've actually watched some movies in this process as well, because even though we've been dead tired in the evenings, we actually also sat down and watched something sometimes.
Cool.
So what's going on with you?
Well, like you know, and we talked about, I hit somewhat of, I don't know, some kind of a wall there just right after the New Year's. And I've been like reevaluating pretty much everything concerning work and family, because I just found myself completely exhausted, just body and soul, just exhausted. There, just a few days into the new year, I hit, like I say, a wall. Started looking at how my job was affecting me, and it's a high pressure job, and I found it's not normal. I should not be completely wiped at the end of every working day, even if I don't have to work weekends or anything like that. It's just relentless. And when you have over 8,000 relevant emails per year and you have like 40 relevant emails per day, you have to take into account. It's like, it just starts to grind you down at some point. And it just, it did that to me. And, hopefully I can get some relief. I'm working on that at work. So that's in some kind of a process. We'll see. But I feel a little better now. I mean, I just had to sleep there for a couple of days, you know. Yeah. It's just, you know, stuff that's been like on your shoulders for a while and it just catches up with you. I think this is fairly common for these days.
Like the New Year's thing? Or
no,
what?
not. I'm just saying, also, like, timing. People in their jobs, they there's always, I mean, you don't just hire people for fun. I mean, you hire people when you need to hire people. And if you have people mm-hmm. that are doing well, and they kind of sometimes forget these people that just handle everything, and mm-hmm. then they find themselves with a workload which is unnatural and silly. And I think that's fairly common these days.
Mm-hmm.
So there's
but
that.
But also because it builds up over time.
It does. It does build up. I mean, it sneaks up on you as well.
Yeah.
So
it's really good that you started to address it.
It is good. I have started to address it at my job. I mm-hmm. like talking about it. It shouldn't be a thing that's shouldn't be like any kind of a secret. It's just one of those things that happens in life.
Yeah.
I mean, I've decided I'm not going to let my job grind me down at this age. If I have to, I'll just, you know, do something else. That's just how it's going to be.
Yeah.
But I am feeling better. I have
that's good.
Yep, I have taken stock, and I am back, and I'm ready for 2019. Should we just do the beers now, please?
I'm really waiting for that. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Also, because I have a special one that Alien got me this time.
Okay.
Since it's the first show, and you know, it has to be a little bit special.
Yeah.
She got me this beer called a Pilsner.
Hmm. Pilsner?
Pilsner. Yeah. So you can see the logo there.
Yes. It's recycled. Okay.
It's recycled beer, and it's actually made at Roskilde Festival, like the big music festival in Denmark, where they take grain that has been fertilized by people peeing much at this festival.
Yes.
And then making the beer from it.
It's a great idea.
So, it's a good idea. I will let you know whether it's good or not. You know?
Come on. I'm excited about this.
Yes, I didn't bring a glass because I thought this is probably something you should drink from the bottle.
Yeah, you don't want urine in your glasses.
No. You want it in your belly. Exactly.
Okay. Rune is sniffing there.
I'm sniffing.
Yes.
And it doesn't...
Doesn't smell of
like
urine?
Pee. No urine in sight.
Let me see. He is taking a sip.
Mm.
So.
Yeah. Fairly good, actually. Okay. Yeah. I actually enjoy this one.
It's a Pilsner.
Yeah, but it is a bit weedy, actually.
Ooh.
I think, actually, you would like it. You could also see... Well, you probably can't, but it's a little bit hazy in its color. So,
okay, hazy.
So maybe they made a wheat beer, actually, just called it a Pilsner and played with the Pilsner word.
Yeah. To get the piss in there.
Yeah.
Okay. Can I just
need
do,
to
do
get
mine
the piss
now?
In here. Mm. Yeah. Is that a Hogan?
Yeah. You know.
Yes.
You know me.
I need to
just maybe mix it up a little bit this year. What do you think?
Yeah, didn't you say you wanted to, actually? When I was sitting right in front of you, you told me to my face, at least, that you would like to do that. But then I'm out of sight, out of mind, and you go back to your old route.
Well, or like I groove. feel like I have an excuse these days. You know, when you don't have energy to do anything, you know, this is not the first thing you think about. Maybe I should like spend my time finding a new beer.
No.
We'll see.
And maybe it's a really good thing that you're not thinking about just drinking a beer at that time also. You know?
Oh, nice. Nice.
But you know, I haven't been drinking beer since our last show, I think.
Really?
Because I'm, you know, usually I'm not drinking that much. You know? So this is also the one-off where I'm just having a beer. Mm-hmm. I need to have my beer while we're doing this show. So it's really... It's really nice getting back into it.
Yeah. For me, it's... I'm drinking like two or three beers a week. That's it. Mm-hmm. Mm, just occasionally after you know, doing the dishes and just taking you like
winding down.
Yeah, take a load off, have a beer.
Yeah.
And
if
you know,
I drink a beer at that time, mm-hmm. then I just start getting so tired, and then I start falling asleep.
Mm. You know what? I want to tell you about something.
Yeah.
Because you know it's this great thing. It's Saturdays. You know what we do on Saturdays? We have a certain food here, and we watch a certain thing afterwards, which is Midsommar Murders. We've done it like last three yes. Saturdays. Yes. And that moment when.
What kind of food? What kind of food goes
noodles,
with Midsommar Murders?
Our noodles.
Oh yes, yeah. yes. Yeah, okay, yeah, the yeah. Thai.
Yeah, yeah,
it's
yeah.
different cultures here.
Yeah, yeah. We do that. And I always make it. And Shep has put Sumle to sleep. And just that moment when I can, when they have gone up, I'll have one Hogan. I'll put Fraser on the phone and make mm-hmm. my noodles. And I'll tell you, man, it's one of my happiest times. Like that moment, just having a whole garden, cooking my noodles, watching Fraser on the phone.
And anticipating Midsommar Murders.
And anticipating Midsommar Murders. Yeah. It's just a moment that makes me so happy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just wanted to share that.
Yeah,
yeah.
I can see that. It's good to have those things to look forward to.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Traditions.
Yeah. Also, I usually get to sleep in on Sundays, so you have like you can watch something, you can watch something afterwards, and you can sleep in, and you can have great food and have fun with your wife.
Yeah.
And watch Frasier.
Watch Frasier.
Yeah, it's not bad, huh?
No. Which season are you in now?
I just have an app. It's just
random.
It's random.
Random.
And
random
I don't Frasier care episode. Anymore. Just something. Very, very occasionally, I just don't know. Not this one. I've seen this enough. But just only occasionally. Yeah. And the evenings, I have like gone from Frasier before I go to sleep with the phone. You watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Oh,
it is. So it's great. It's great.
I tried it.
Yeah, you and comedy. There's something going on there. I'm sure you're going to tell me about Deadpool 2 later.
Well, should we go into all that?
Yeah, let's do that now.
Because I really watched Deadpool 2 on the plane this time because Raskwa was sitting far enough away from the screen.
All right.
And I did it only because of you. Okay. Because you've been saying that it was actually really, really good.
Mm-hmm. Which it is.
And you know, it is like you're saying, like, I don't know if I'm just, like, I just don't have any humor for this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel a little bit weird about it because I didn't laugh once. I think I might have smiled a little bit like once during this whole thing, but all of the rest I was just thinking, really?
Yeah.
There was one scene I have to highlight this, but I did like the superhero with the power of luck.
Yes. That's the funniest part, I thought.
Yes, it was the best part of the whole thing. And it was also one of those superheroes you could get behind because luck is actually something that is so intangible mm-hmm. in real life anyway.
Yeah.
But some people just seem to have it. And the way they created that whole persona, I really enjoyed that. I think there should have been a whole movie about her just being lucky all the time. Mm.
Yeah, I mean,
that was really good.
You like you said, you tried Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and just you're like wired differently when it comes to this stuff than I am. And it is what it is, you know.
Yeah, but you know, you always feel a little bit weird about it when there's like a general consensus of these movies are, well, Deadpool, at least the first one, was pretty good. Everybody said, and Deadpool 2, like, It's a little bit more mixed, but generally speaking, it was really good. And when you really don't like it, then you're just thinking, is there something wrong with me? Like all the Hangover movies, I absolutely despise them. And I don't find them funny at all, you know, but people are just laughing their asses off.
I don't know why anyone would watch number two or three or four of that crap.
No.
But I watched the first one and it has some jokes that work. And that's fine. I mean, it's, but I would never spend my time watching number two or three of that.
No. On the other hand, I did also watch Game Night because of you, because it was also on the plane.
You remember I thought that was really bad.
No.
I did.
But you know, I actually enjoyed that a little bit.
I gave it 2 out of 5. That's 4 out of 10.
Yeah, I think I gave it like 2 or 2.5. But it was pretty good for a comedy because there was actually one character, Jesse Plemons, that I was actually laughing at.
I love Jesse Plemons.
I think he was really good. Also, Jason Bateman is... Like, I just enjoy his characters. And I also like when Kyle Chandler...
I like him as
...is showing up, you know? It's so rare that you see those guys, actually, except for Jesse Plemons, actually.
Kyle Chandler is a great actor, I think.
Yeah.
I like him.
So there's a lot of problems during this whole movie and plot-wise and all that kind of stuff. But the setup I enjoyed, and I was excited to see where it was going.
See, I noticed you said for a comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, see, I gave it 2 stars, and I gave it a little bit extra than what I thought, because it was just, the script was awful, and it was just crap. But, comedy is tough. That's what and this comedy... It has like this premise that it kind of has to, there's a loop and it should end up working and it doesn't. Mm-hmm. But like Deadpool 2 is not like that. It's just, it doesn't take itself seriously. Having said that, I mean, comedy's tough. So I tend to give them extra credit when they do it really, really well and entertain mm-hmm. you. That's why they do them. And for me, Deadpool 2 did that perfectly for me.
Yeah, obviously so. And, like 4.5, was it?
Yeah, 4.5. It's even more than I gave Hail Caesar, which is 4.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. I just absolutely love Hail Caesar. Mm-hmm. Maybe I should rethink that one.
Yes, maybe you should. Yeah. But you can't compare apples to oranges.
No. You shouldn't try. And,
no. But I gave it like 1, I think, Deadpool 2, you know.
And that is your right, and you will not be judged here for that.
No. I tried another comedy, Clown Forever, the sequel to the feature film Clown, which is the Danish version of Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Can I just say that I thought the clown movie went too far?
Yeah. Well, I enjoyed the first one, but it did go too far. But that's kind of their thing of going too far. But this one is just... Yeah.
Going
too far without being funny.
Yeah, but it went too far in a specific way. Playing to a certain type of audience. If it were playing to some somewhat intelligent audience, that's different for me. But that was just, I don't know. That was the lowest of lowbrow garbage that they did there.
Yeah, I haven't watched it other than once in the cinema. And as I told you before, like it was in Iceland. And there was just so many people laughing at times I wouldn't have laughed. And I thought that was hilarious, you know. So it was such a good experience watching the first Clown. And people were, enjoying it.
I enjoyed a lot of that film. I enjoyed the TV shows as well. But at the end of the day, it's always the same. Frank gets into trouble. Casper is Mr. Fix-It. And it's always, I don't know. I've had enough, I think. I don't need this anymore.
I also had enough. It was only when I was sick and I was lying here and I was like, should I actually try this one on Netflix? And I did, and it was not pleasant.
Okay.
But I do think like the first one is probably all right to watch if you want to.
I think most of it was pretty funny and pretty good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. You can take it away a little bit because I have some more as well. You know, it's been a while.
Yeah. Did I mention last time that I went to see Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse with Sumali? I don't think I did.
Because that was after we recorded.
Yeah, and we went to this theater and it's called something like IMAX. And I learned...
Something like IMAX?
Yeah, I learned that means extra noise and craziness. And so I learned something. I learned not to take a two-year-old to such a screening. But okay. I did enjoy the film.
Yeah.
Even though I'm at the age where I think, does it have to be so loud?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. But I really enjoyed the film. I did send you, I took a little video to ask you, should I be wearing 3D glasses? But
Should you have?
For a while, it felt a little bit like that, but I just think it's the style.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it's the style. And
it's a little bit jerky.
Yeah. Yeah. I liked the film.
Yeah.
And, I have not been watching much else. TV, maybe.
So, yeah.
I've been watching the Icelandic season 2 of Trapped, which is like weekly. It's the only thing I do weekly now.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't know. I'll let it play out.
Okay.
I started, we did the Kaminsky Method and F is for Family on Netflix.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I kind
of
liked...
First season of F for Family?
No, third.
Okay, yeah,
it's anime.
So you've been you've been following along. I only watched the first season.
Yeah, it's one of those. It's Bill Burr. It's Brainchild, I think. I don't really rate it that high. It's just kind of funny. Yeah, and
some of it is all right.
Yeah, some of it's pretty good, and it's just zone out kind of thing. Just zone out and sit there and enjoy stuff without thinking too much. The Kaminsky Method, though. I kind of like the fact that they're doing stuff with older actors these days, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So how is it?
I started it, but then I was thinking, is this some kind of actor studio? I don't really want to sit here and like listen to Michael Douglas right now.
It's not like that. It's it is fairly funny at times, and we kind of liked it.
Yeah.
But maybe of the same ilk. Than not really as F is for Family, but it's one of those things that you don't really put into the highest of TV echelons, but at the same time, enjoyable.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
There was Michael Douglas scandal that came up in the US, something with Me Too. I didn't read about it. So
just recently.
Yeah, I think that's why people stopped talking about it.
Okay.
Yeah. And I don't claim to know what it is. So
I just saw that theater I was raving about once I went to Boston.
Mm-hmm.
Boston.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Coolidge Corner Theater. They posted the whole discussion with Michael Douglas, because he was going there to get that Coolidge Corner Theater Award.
Yeah.
And they did actually watch Wonder Boys with Michael Douglas, and then they talked about it afterwards.
All right.
So, I just saw that was last week. It just popped up, the whole video.
You know what? Every time I see that guy, I want to watch Falling Down.
Yeah.
Again.
You mentioned it last time.
Yeah.
Maybe we should do that one, because I don't think I've watched it since I was, well, younger than 10 years old, I think, and I didn't get it, and I thought it was just a little bit violent.
I'm up for that. I'm up for that.
Speaking of old people, you know, like people you usually don't see, and like you said, with a Kaminsky method?
The Kaminsky method. Kaminsky.
I saw another film on Netflix popping up with Chevy Chase and Richard Dreyfuss.
What?
And Andy McDowell. And it's called The Last Laugh.
Andy McDowell?
Yes, Andy McDowell.
Female the, McDowell.
Yes, yes.
Richard Dreyfuss. Of course. Okay. Sorry. Uh-huh. I was thinking Richard Pryor. Sorry.
No, that felt strange. That would be weird. Yeah. But Dreyfuss.
Okay.
Yeah, Dreyfuss.
So he's out there
from
still.
From Jaws.
Yeah.
He's out there. Yeah. And it's so weird. And I saw it. I had to go on Metacritic just to see what does critics say about this film. And it's a comedy as well. And it actually got like 72. And I thought, that's pretty decent.
It's not bad.
And then we started watching it. And after an hour, Aileen went to sleep. I was like, no, I'm not doing this anymore. And I paused it. I haven't watched the rest of it yet.
What's that called?
Last Laugh.
Last Laugh.
Yeah. So Chevy Chase is an old booker of, like an agent going on a retirement home. And there he meets Richard Dreyfuss, who was an old comedian.
Mm.
And then they go out on a tour for one last tour. And along the way, they meet Andy McDowell in Kansas. And Chevy Chase falls in love with Andy McDowell.
I've always liked Richard Dreyfuss.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that.
It's so strange seeing him again. You know, there's this weird feeling of them not having been in the game for quite a while. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they've been doing anything, but it really seems like they haven't been like keeping up with acting. So
Chevy
seems like
did
very
Community.
Much... Yeah, 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 yeah. I know
for a few seasons.
I don't know. It seemed a little bit forced, the whole thing.
All right.
Andie McDowell is just herself still. You know, I mean, she could almost have popped right out of Groundhog Day. You know,
yeah,
doing the same thing, smiling.
I had a bit of, always had a bit of a crush on her, I have to say.
Yeah,
yeah, from Four Weddings as well.
Mm.
She
Maybe
has
you
that.
Should try it out.
She has something.
Yeah, I think so too. And a lot of people are like a little bit like mean to her, I think.
Really?
Like, yeah, saying that she's not that good of an actress. And
why would anybody want
to
be mean to
her? I always feel
like
it's fine.
Yeah.
You know?
All right.
So, I will probably just get to watch the last half hour. I saw that there was a little thing about parents being something else before they become parents. And that, like, it rang a little bit true to me, like how you were before and then after, and you're still the same person, and your kids don't really know the person you are.
Okay.
Only the parent. There was something like that. It was.
There was something
right
like that where? In that?
In Last Laugh.
Okay.
You know? Like one of the themes that come up.
Okay.
And, you know, it was relevant.
Mm-hmm. For you, but, yeah. I get
yeah.
that. All right.
Yeah. That's it. Okay.
I have one more thing to say. I have
yes.
started The Deuce.
Great.
And,
finally.
And we, of course, love it. I mean, well, when you know that these are the guys in Maitre May and The Wire, you cannot, you're like glued to the screen there. So I think we're like three episodes in and we're taking it slowly. It's like, it's not from the same ilk as the Kaminsky method or Efforts for Family. You really sit down to watch and you take it all in. It's not, you know what I mean?
it's not easily digestible.
No, you should just really get in there and yeah. just really experience it. It's one of those things. And I got to say, I like it. Even James Franco, which I don't really, haven't really gotten thus far, but he's really good.
He is very good.
Yeah.
Like, he still has his James Franco-ness, but it's good.
I like the little subtle differences between the twins.
Yeah.
I like how he does that, and that's it's not easy to do, I think.
I don't think so either. And you're not, like, taken out of the show by having them in the same scene.
No.
I mean, you just completely buy it.
I mean, I like that they don't take the easy route when they have them in the same scene. They have like a mirror in the back, and it's not easy to do.
No, I mean,
it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad that you started. Maybe we can catch up and watch the second season together.
We'll do that, and then we'll talk about it on the show.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's do it.
So do you think it's time to do the Light and Breezy First Reformed?
Yeah, let's try and get into that one.
Okay.
Explosives.
She was becoming someone I didn't know.
Opportunistic diseases, anarchy, martial law. You will live to see this.
But you had no idea that he was thinking of...
No, I'm so frightened.
These kids, they want certainty. You know, don't think, follow. They fall prey to extremism.
It's a world without hope.
No. I have not lost my faith.
You think that what we did together was a sin?
I've seen enough real sin to know the difference.
You didn't tell the police, right?
Take a look at your own life before you criticize others.
These are frightening times. We have to be patient.
Well, somebody has to do something. Are you
wild? That was a clip from First Reformed, and it's about Ethan Hawke being a pastor in... close to New York somewhere, and he is slowly losing his faith, or like he's starting to question it after he visits an activist who is talking about the state of the world and the bleakness of the future. So that's where we start. That's what's going on, and then you get into the intricacies of mega churches and systems and
there's a lot of stuff to kind of bite stuff. Into there. I just looked it up. It is New York, but I got a distinct I didn't think about it, but I got a distinct New England feel there. Mm-hmm. So well, not that far away, New York.
No.
Well, like I said, we have a lot of stuff to look at here.
Yeah.
Let's just say it's heavy on the on the themes. It's the big issues, wouldn't you say?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And symbolism is everywhere.
Yeah.
And the first thing that jumps into your eyes here is that it's in 4:3 Academy format. So it's like the old TV screen.
Academy format.
Yeah.
I think that's what Academy? You call it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That 4:3 division.
Yeah.
And it starts off almost like some of the shots seem kind of black and white ish. Like they really draw the colors out of the shots.
Let's start there. It's a good point to start. I have a theory about why he did that. I really liked the cinematography, by the way.
Anti-green grass.
It's not green grass, more ozu. No. There's almost no panning at all, I think. The camera doesn't move at all. Maybe one scene, I think.
There's one particular scene at
there's
least.
There's a particular that is, scene, absolutely, yes. And, yeah. Okay. My theory...
I love the deliberateness of, like, positioning the cameras and just being, like, sure that this is the shot you want. I was always... I told you I was reminded of Jim Jarmusch in this sense. Like, you have those...
You reminded of frames. All the disciples of Osu, Rune. You need to watch Osu.
Yeah.
You need to do that.
Yes.
Okay. My theory is, did you notice that when Ethan Hawke is talking to Cedric the Entertainer, who plays the mega church pastor, the first time they meet up and you have the camera placement very, very close to them, not like extreme close up, but a little bit kind of disturbingly close, a little bit uncomfortably close. Did you notice that? So my theory is that the 4:3 aspect has something to do with how he frames his shots. There are other scenes as well where he's like framing faces, well, head and chest kind of thing.
Yeah.
And maybe he just thought, this is the ratio I need for this.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll just throw that out there. I have no idea.
Or maybe like often you can have more air above people's heads and stuff because it's a taller shot.
True.
And maybe what you're saying with the head and torso, maybe it's the mind and heart.
Could be.
Maybe. I didn't think about it before now, but yeah, maybe. I also have another idea about it, and it's more like harkens back to the whole old like TV set.
Mm-hmm.
The movie is clearly digital. You can tell that the image is very crisp.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have that 4:3 format. So it's like a clash of like times.
It is that, actually. Yes. I thought about that as well.
So it all like makes sense in different ways. And I enjoyed it. And it was beautiful to look at. It was. I
really enjoyed the camera placement and just it not moving, it being a slow burn.
Yeah.
The colors as well. Like you said, they like drained the colors from the shot and it felt a bit like a little bit gothic at times, colorless and kind of simplified. And then you went to the mega church and you had colors all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a
high def resolution and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed the camera work immensely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Me too. And it pulled attention to itself also because sometimes people walked out of frame and the camera stayed there until people got into the frame again. And it was like, but like it draws attention to itself, but it also just involves you much more. You're so much more thinking, what is going on here all the time?
Yeah.
Like judging and, you know, like trying to put the pieces together.
For me, it has more merit, this quiet style, this steady style from the constant panning and editing, like editing very, 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 very sparse, of course.
Yeah.
And this is exactly what I like. This is my taste. And it's because I feel it has more merit somehow than being constantly led to things and like duped in some way with the editing and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So you get to like experience stuff slowly.
Yeah. And you get time to actually like take them in and interpret them a little bit.
Absolutely.
I was saying that this movie is very symbolic. There's a lot of shots that are definitely set up in a way. So you start interpreting in one way or the other, but it takes time. And it's great to sit there and just take it all in.
Mm-hmm.
It also requires much more of the actors, I think, when they need to keep the focus in that way and really act throughout long shots.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
I agree.
So yeah.
Symbolism-wise, you have a lot of doubles. You have a lot of... you have the mega church and the old and a lot of old versus new God versus no God and all kinds of
Faith and no faith
mm-hmm.
also.
Mm-hmm.
I think the beauty of this film, like it's a very slow film. I was very tired when I watched it due to everything that's been going on, but I still kept awake. And it has a lot of stuff going on. But what I really enjoyed by it was that it's obviously about religion, but it's also about just like faith and how to get through the day, how to get through life, and how to keep motivated. And you have all these players. But ultimately, it's about how you decide to take in all the options and go forward.
Mm-hmm.
And because when I started watching this, I was thinking this is going to be this like the activism and then the science and the like religion is not something we should stick by.
Mm-hmm.
But it really wasn't. But you had Ethan Hawke's character being a pastor who is starting to lose faith, but he was also the most believing of all the characters there as well.
Does like, he ever say, Rune, that he's losing faith? Does he say it? I couldn't find it, but it's definitely there under the surface that, well, he changes, he starts to think a bit differently and almost does something at the end there. And it's you kind of think from the beginning he's going to lose faith. It's even in the text I wrote, like Pia Paradis, the introduction thing about a pastor losing his loss of faith kind of film.
Yeah. I think it's more like losing his direction in life. And we have this one scene, like the major catalyst of the whole story when he talks to the activist where he's saying that he lost his son due to his own beliefs, like how he pushed him into doing something and lost his son by it. And that has made his outlook on the world kind of like he lost his way and a little bit his faith, but he was still a pastor and he believed it. But I think that's there's also this whole thing about not pushing your own beliefs onto other people. I think that's a great like theme running underneath this whole film.
I think he narrates it occasionally. There's a narrator and it's Ethan Hawke, and the narrator is pretty much a believer, I felt. But then by his actions, he's doing something differently. I'll quote, he's talking about calling, and he says, "They are called for their all-consuming knowledge of the emptiness of all things that can only be filled with the presence of our Savior." And he's talking about like people that get a calling like himself. This is what he says, but then he starts to do things different. One thing, everything is breaking down around him. He's like his health is deteriorating. No one shows up to his church. There is all kinds of things that are in decay and decline. The church itself. And you have a clear divide between him and his old historic church and the new mega church.
Yeah.
Thing there.
Mm-hmm.
I think we should say that the director is called Paul Schrader. He is, I think, probably most famous for writing the script to Taxi Driver for Scorsese. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Also did many films like maybe most notable American Gigolo.
Yes, American Gigolo.
From 1980. Let's just say he has a point to make with this film, and boy, does he make it. You want to talk about that a little bit? It's like a mission statement, isn't
it? Please, yeah.
It's like a mission. Maybe just before the half-hour mark, we get like this speech from one of the characters. It's a poignant speech about climate change, and I feel it's like the film's statement. Mm. We're not sure what's going on before that, but when that comes, everything after that is climate change. Would you say?
It's a part of it, definitely. It's one of the main catalysts of the film, because due to climate change, there might not be a future.
Mm-hmm.
So
and he talks about how the world is going to look in 2050.
Mm.
And it's a very poignant speech, and it makes you think, and like for us bringing kids into this world at this point,
yeah,
how is it going to be for them at mm-hmm. our age, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But then you have the bleak outlook and the more positive. I think like the way Ethan Hawke responds to it is pretty interesting as well, like keeping on like trying to find solutions.
Mm.
And yeah, where the activist's point of view was very much like, there's nothing we can do anymore. It's already despair. Too late.
Yeah.
It's already too late.
Mm-hmm.
And it might be, you know, we don't know. But as with many other things, you don't really know until you know.
I just think it's, felt it's like, it is like a mission statement from the director. I mean, he's mm-hmm. 72 now. He's saying we need to do something right yeah. now.
Mm-hmm.
It's a call to action.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think you're completely right that it is, and it's the thing that you're left with.
And I'm thinking he might be an atheist, this director, because nothing about this film says there's a God. I thought nothing. Did you find anything?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of that was my whole point. Like, there, it's not that much like religion, but it's more like a belief, and maybe not a calling, but you need to find your own way, and you don't have to let other people believe the same thing as you do.
Uh-huh.
And we have characters in this film, like of all sorts. I think the activist is definitely an atheist or like a non-believer.
Oh, yeah,
because he's also being presented like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the pregnant woman who is a believer, but more like a believer out of tradition, because she's just
sure.
been in it her whole life, and she didn't yeah. know anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have someone like the choir leader, who is a complete, like, in complete faith to the mega church.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she is a believer of the systemized religion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, without question. And and then you have the people like profiting off of a said belief or like that system there, and it's all like different kinds of beliefs, and like it's all right for them specifically.
Mm-hmm.
But Ethan Hawke has a statement also, to like a response to the atheist, saying like, between belief and fact there is faith somewhere. And it's like the duality of all that kind of stuff that mm-hmm. actually is the faith and the religion.
Mm-hmm.
But you have just so many on either side, like drawing it out towards the edges, and actually you need to see the middle of it.
Of course.
As Ethan Hawke is struggling with throughout this film. And he's going the activist route, and he's also like changing and going a little bit in a different direction. But I don't want to say anything about that, because it might be spoiling stuff.
Mm-hmm. I will say that people listening to this, you should watch this film. It's relevant and it's good. About the mission statement from the director, I think it most certainly is clear that he kind of he's not about faith, I don't think. And we have the smart person in the film, Ethan Hawke, being questioning and moving away from faith. So there's that, and I mean, there's still definitely.
I feel like he's finding faith,
yeah,
along the way as well.
Well, faith, certainly not organized religion.
No, not in certainly the organized that. Way.
I mean, I feel we are left with some hope, but where does that come from? It comes from within us, most definitely, yes. And it comes from. Well, love between people and care, but there's nothing in the surroundings, even the old beautiful church and everything, the history and versus the mega church. There's nothing there that inspires anything. But you know, this is not real. It's very interesting that he casts stand-up comedian as the pastor of the. Mega church, yeah. Cedric the Entertainer.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think he comes from stand up originally. So,
but you need to be an entertainer in order to be a pastor at a mega church.
I like that he doesn't paint him with those colors. That he's like a caricature. He's not like that. He actually comes across as a pretty nice man.
Yeah, but still, yeah, it's a business.
It's a business. Thing.
And there's also a very clear like tie to a mob like depiction of the whole mega church people.
Absolutely,
there's a lot of scenes like that where you're thinking this is so weird. Like, why do you need so many bodyguards? Why do you need the big black limos and that kind of stuff? You know,
5,000 seater. The church.
Yeah. And you never see this church filled up in any way. It's only like huge and empty. And I think the interesting part about, like, we say that Ethan Hawke is losing faith, but he's actually the one being most in contact with people. Mm. Whenever you see the mega church, for instance, you see a televised version of it, and you see the pastor sitting in his office speaking and preaching to people, and it's all through screens, and it's like so distant, all of it. And Ethan Hawke is the only one like actually showing up, counseling, you know, like being involved and not really taking a stance, but helping, you know, trying to help, you know, people to see something.
Anyway, the mission feels clear from the director to me.
And it's a good point to make, and it's something that should be made now.
Let's talk about the fantasy scene. There's a certain scene we're not going to go into, but I thought about this. What do I think? I mean, is this okay? Yeah. You have a particular style going on, and then we do this, and I had no problem with it being there. But in it, we have some stuff that make me think that he is a little heavy-handed on making the point he's making. Yeah. I thought it maybe would have been a stronger point if he had not gone to these lengths. I mean, the fantasy is fine. I kind of liked it even. Mm-hmm. And I thought, just sat up like, what is going on here? This is interesting.
Yeah.
Where's this going? But then... It's the same old story. You don't need to go overboard with making a point. Understated is usually better.
Yeah,
I feel.
But I think it was all right actually, because you have the two parties, and the whole catalyst is the climate, and he's doing it with someone who is like working as an activist, has those beliefs. So that is what's being shared in this magical situation. But yeah, of course, it's also a movie, and he chose to show those pictures, and yeah.
Makes me, it was a little bit uncomfortably heavy-handed for me. It takes a little bit away from it, but I mean, the point needs to be made. The point needs to be made. That's for sure. And he certainly does that. so I have to give him full marks. I mean, full respect for doing that.
Yeah.
I do.
I think so too.
I mean, as a movie, it's really tackling the big questions. And again, kudos for doing that. I mean, I thought the acting was good. I was really impressed with that all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
Even the even Cedric was pretty damn good. Pretty damn good.
Yeah. I mean, Ethan Hawke is the star, of course, of this this film. And his face is just so good. If I had to take something away from it, and Alien was also mentioning it while we were watching it, he has health issues in this film.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't show that much. Like, I was not really aware that he was feeling that badly. It seemed like he was actually all right.
I have to disagree with you a little bit there. I thought that was I thought he did really well. It was subtle, which I like. No, so I think I agree. He's the star. I also want to mention the man who plays Amanda Seyfried's husband. Yeah. He's called Philip Ettinger. He doesn't even have a Wikipedia page.
Okay.
But he paints a really interesting picture there in his one or two scenes. Really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
I thought really... he came across as a really promising actor.
Yeah.
To say.
Mm-hmm.
We have a bad guy in Michael Gaston.
Yeah, was that? Yeah, Michael Gaston. I really enjoyed his performance.
He's one of those guys who's always there and you don't know his name.
Yeah. As soon as he came up, you just started to despise him right away. Like, everything he said was just so... irritating. You know.
Yeah, but so. Tell you what though, things aren't always as cut and dry, black and white as people will believe they are. He was painted a little bit harshly, I thought. I mean I don't want companies to be polluting and stuff like that, but I just think there's a middle ground that needs to be utilized more. I don't think he overstepped, the director, with painting him too darkly, but it was just dancing on the line there, I thought.
Yeah, I mean,
things are not black and white.
No, but he just acted like an asshole as well. Yeah. Like he could have approached them in different ways.
And certainly there are assholes in this world.
How he did. Yeah. You know,
I always like that guy, Michael Gaston. He's very good.
Yeah.
And he always plays this. He's never in a lead role and he's always good. He's like Kurtwood Smith, you know, he's always there everywhere.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. I've seen him before, but it's someone like you never know that it's
exactly
him.
Exactly. And what about the soundscape there?
Yeah, it was dark.
Lustmord. It was sparsely used, and it was. I thought it was good. I thought when it was very cool. I think I'll use that word. Cool.
Cool sound.
Yeah.
It was one of the only laughs I had when they were playing the organ, because it was such a cheerful little sound tune they played. And it was just not. Like, nothing was cheerful, really, about this film. So,
no. I mean, things were falling apart, basically. And the only hope we get in the entire film is the relationship there that develops.
Yeah.
The single hopeful thing. Mm-hmm. But it's good to have hope.
And it is just hope. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a means to go on living.
And
whether or not it actually ended well or not.
Yeah. My whole point is that the only hope he leaves us is not faith or religion. It comes from within us. It doesn't point to a god or a being looking over us at all.
It's something within you, at least.
Absolutely. We can agree on that.
And you know, like there was always this like symbolism. Like you had a lot of shots within his chambers, and there was all these doors open and closed, and darkness and light inside. Mm. And I always felt like that symbolized this whole like everything is going on inside you. Mm. Like you didn't have these divine images like Mel Gibson would give you in Hacksaw Ridge or something, where you see the light from above and
of course
light shining in and God rays and all that kind of mm-hmm. stuff. Everything was so contained and it was so internal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it was just the beauty of this film. Also that it leaves it open to interpretation. Like, of course, you have the climate focus and you have the faith, but however you want to interpret it, it's really up to you, because that's actually what the director wants you to believe. You know?
Yeah. Like I did say, well, the one drawback I had was it being a little heavy-handed, but
yeah,
I liked the way he approached it being heavy-handed, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. And, you know, it's such a hard thing. Like, as soon as you address something that is really important, like the climate, but also when you start to address religion and faith in a film in this way, it can go haywire really quickly, and people can take stances on either side. I find it hard for people to watch this movie and be against its viewpoints. I don't think that, I mean, except for the climate change, if you're really against that is a thing, then I don't see it in this film, because it's so like wide, it's so all embracing of true. Different sorts of true. Belief.
True. I do like that he doesn't paint the mega church in stronger colors. He could have done that. I mean that should be applauded that he didn't. Mm-hmm. He was tempted, you know.
I'm sure he was.
And there are a few scenes on the cutting board that could have, you know. I'm sure that it's like that.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Kudos. I'm glad he didn't.
I'm glad he didn't as well. Yeah. I thought he should be applauded. It's a really good film.
Mm-hmm.
Highly recommended from me, at least. 4 stars.
Yes. Also very highly recommended from me. I would love to go more into detail with the actual ending, but I think I'll leave that for everyone
to watch
and experience themselves. Yeah,
we shouldn't spoil that, no. I think.
And if nothing else, watch it for Ethan Hawke. You know, Ethan Hawke is one of the greatest actors like working today, I think. And he's doing such a great job. He's always taking on like kind of weird roles or like out of the ordinary roles. And
sure, he's not Hollywood. That's great. He's not Hollywood. He's
but
really
he
good
is kind this. Of. But he like he's working in that area. But he's just not.
He's not.
You know?
He's doing something that matters to him, I think. And I think so too. He does really well here. So just go see it.
Go see it.
Okay.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So that was it. If any of you out there in the world have any other comments to First Reformed or any of the other films we briefly discussed before we got into First Reformed, please let us know on Conversation No, on contact at theconversationpodcast.net or on our Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud profiles, The Conversation, a Nordic Film Podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Social media. If you're a social media person, you know where to find us on social media.
Yeah, you do.
For next time, I think we have, well, pretty much decided what we're going to do.
Lanthimos.
Lanthimos. It's the favorite. I'm watching it only for Sophie, of course.
Of course you do. I also watch it for Sophie, but I also watch it due to Lobster being so great, and it has to be great, this thing.
I think he deserves a second chance with me, Lanthimos, after I didn't really care for The Lobster.
As I told you, you need to rewatch The Lobster, because I did, and I enjoyed it so much more the second time.
The whole dystopian thing is
a bit
tough for me.
You did like Bird Box. So
did I? Did I?
No. I mean, you at least you liked it more than I did. I think
I'm just not like this heavy-handed with the marks. You know, I gave it 2. You gave it 1. We pretty much thought the same about it. You know, but The Lobster, I thought I kind of rated it, but I didn't enjoy it.
No.
So maybe there's a certain other show. I thought maybe I'd watch Dogtooth and The Killing of a Sacred Deer as well, and have a Lanthimos discussion next time.
I will definitely catch up with Killing of the Sacred Deer, and then watch The Favorite. It should be in the cinemas very soon.
Cool.
Here in Denmark.
Actually, we're really looking forward to that.
Yeah, a lot of people have been talking about it. Like, the reason we got into First Reformed was because of these like last of the year lists and all that, like a lot of buzz. The Favorite is just on the top of all these lists as well, completely out of nowhere almost. And also, oddly enough, because it's a period piece, and it's something that is usually a little bit narrower in scope.
It is rooted in some kind of history, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So that's appealing to me, while The Lobster was not rooted
in
anything.
But I still think you get the dark humor and the black humor that Danish people are so known for.
drinking their tea in their hygge on the sofa.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Arune, I think this is it for today, isn't it?
It is.
Okay, guys, we will catch you next time. Anything?
And Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Right, this is our real first show, so Happy New Year. We're looking forward to the rest of 2019 with you.
Okay, bye now.